Welcome to the Real Estate Podcast. I'm Rich LaRue, Vice President of Corporate Brokerages for HomeSmart and also the designated broker for the Phoenix operation.
And I'm Todd Sumney, the Chief Industry Officer for HomeSmart.
And we have a special treat for you today. As our guest, we have Larry Cohen with us. And Larry is a longtime agent with me as a broker. I believe that Larry has actually made it through a couple of companies with me. So he's been a HomeSmart agent now for 12 years. We've developed a friendship over that period of time. Larry is a great agent. He's got a phenomenal real estate background. He's a true real estate professional. And he has written a book. It is the Little Black Book of Real Estate. And you can see the irony in it because this is not a little book. But it is a fun read. And so welcome, Larry. We're delighted to have you here.
I wanted to thank you and Todd and Rachel for inviting me and also for allowing me to deviate from the norm, because I know normally what you guys do is have people on there that give instruction, that give great hints to realtors to better their business. And that's very important. I get that. My presentation is a little different. I'm going to take some of the weird and crazy events that happened to me in the real estate business, and all realtors who've been in the business for any length of time have the same issues. They have weird stuff that happens to them. And most of us have been told by our clients, well, you should write a book. Well, I wrote a book. So based on the experiences that I've had, weird, wonderful, crazy, whatever. And the book, as you know, is called The Little Black Book of Real Estate. And its dimensions are a little larger because I had to accommodate larger font in order for those of us who are visually impaired or visually challenged to be able to read it.
Let's talk about this book. Let's talk about your experience in real estate. Let's talk about you, which I know is an uncomfortable topic for you to talk about yourself, but we're going to do it today.
Well, it's not uncomfortable for me. I know myself pretty well. So as you had mentioned, I've been in the business for a very long time, 40 plus years. And I know that's shocking to you because I look like I'm way too young to be in it for 40 years.
Yeah. How do you get a California 40... real estate license at 5?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's it. I got it actually at 11. Yeah, you're right.
There we go. Okay.
However, I've been to many different companies. They didn't throw me out. I just left on my own accord. I believe HomeSmart is the fifth one I've been with. And I must say, this is unsolicited, that I've never been more comfortable in a real estate company than I have been here at HomeSmart.
Love hearing that.
Thank you.
Love hearing
it's
that.
It's absolutely true. Wow. I was a longtime agent in Los Angeles at a very large company. I was actually Realtor of the or Rookie of the Year when I started in the business, just after they invented electricity. And after that, I worked myself up. I became a trainer and then eventually a manager of a very large, productive West Los Angeles office with 65 agents and five people who worked under me. And I left there because my hair was turning gray at an alarming rate. And I know you can identify with that, Richard.
Me too.
At any rate, I came out to the desert, hooked on with a very large company out here who shall go nameless, thinking that the smaller companies out here would not have the same cachet in Los Angeles, where I was hoping to get most of my referrals, and I did get them that way. I did stay with that company for a couple of years. And then when people realized it didn't matter what company I was with, as long as I was with a good company, whether they knew about it or not was not important. They knew about me and the referrals kept coming in when I moved over to HomeSmart, and the rest is real estate history.
All right. Well, glad to have you here today.
Thank you.
Your book is a fun read. And really appreciate the font size, among other things. We don't want to give away everything in the book.
No.
But I do want to touch on a couple of things. And so you have a tennis story that you would like to share.
A what? I'm sorry?
Tennis. Tennis, anyone?
Oh, Tennis Anyone. Yes, that's the one that seems to have grabbed most people's attention. It all started out very innocently. I had sold a very nice townhouse in Playa del Rey to a young attorney and his wife, who I believe was a paralegal. And as is my way of doing things, I keep in touch with them. I send them birthday cards, anniversary of the purchase of the property, et cetera, plus once a month, I send an email out to all my clients and to 2,000 agents in Los Angeles and Orange County, kind of begging for referrals. Well, my phone rings, and if it isn't, by all means, it happens to be the attorney, the young attorney I sold the property to. So I figured, well, they wanted to start a family, and they want a bigger house. Well, that was not the case. What he had was a referral for me. A young man, and I think it was his brother, who wanted to buy a $1.5 million house fairly close to the ocean in Marina del Rey. Now, in those days, that's the early 90s, 1.5 was a lot of money. It was, and as a matter of fact, up to that point, it was the biggest sale I would ever make. So I asked him what the parameters were, and he told me, and he said they're putting 50% down, et cetera, et cetera. And I queried him as to why or how two teenage boys, they were in their upper teens, were able to get $750,000 to put down. And the response was, it's an inheritance. Good enough for me. It sounds right. Happens all the time. Called up the one who number he gave me, and his name was Edward, not his real name, but we'll use that for now. And we arranged to meet. He came to my office. We sat down, and with him was another person who I assumed was Leonard, his brother. Well, it wasn't Leonard, his brother. It was a cousin of his who coincidentally happened to be a realtor. Well, that didn't sit real well with me, and I made it very clear that I was not going to share this commission. And he understood. He said, fine, I'm just here for moral support, and he stuck by that. I got the information from Edward as to what he wanted. He seemed a little preoccupied, but gave me the proper information. We parted company, although we had created a bit of a bond, as I try to do with all my clients, try and find something that we're both interested in. He apparently was a very good tennis player, loved the game, and I was no slouch myself. So we talked about that, and he said he had a bullet serve, and I said, well, I'm a serve and volley guy too, so we got into that a bit. At any rate, we ended the conversation. He went back. We arranged for another appointment. He came for viewings. I showed him four or five properties. He fell in love with one of them and immediately wanted to write an offer. Of course, I was thrilled. The asking price was 1.5, and we were offering 1.3. And I said, be prepared for a counteroffer. And he seemed very comfortable with that. And sure enough, a counteroffer came in, and I was delighted. It was 1.4 with the normal other escrow title, et cetera, et cetera. I then called him. I didn't get him, but left a message. No return call. An hour later, did it again. No return call. Getting a bit nervous, I called the referring attorney, and he said, yeah, sometimes they disappear for a while. They've got a lot of irons in the fire. Okay. Well, I'm dejected because I don't know that that's the explanation I wanted to hear. I haven't heard back from them. I'm watching TV. And sure enough, I hit, channel surfing, I hit the news, and apparently something weird is happening at LAX, the airport over there. A passenger was being arrested. Apparently, I was thinking he was a rowdy passenger, and he was being arrested as he deplaned. Well, they zoomed in on this fellow, and by George, you know who it was? It was Edward. He was being arrested. He and his brother were being arrested for murder. Murdering their parents. So I decided right then and there, my deal was probably dead, pardon the pun. And I was devastated, as you can well imagine, given the size of the deal. Well, I made the mistake of having dinner a couple nights later with my best friend. His name is Freddie, not his real name. And he was a district attorney. He's now retired, but at the time was district attorney. And I stupidly told him the story. Well, he found it in his best interest to call up the prosecuting DAs and tell them about what happened to me. The next day, a district attorney's detective shows up at my office, asks me a few questions. He wants to see the property. I showed him the property, and that was the end of it. Well, in the words of a great coach, he once said, "Not so fast, my friend." Apparently, I was being subpoenaed to appear at the court as a witness for the prosecution. I was told it was going to last 45 seconds. Famous last words, right? I slap on my suit on the day of the trial and the one tie that I own and showed up downtown LA at the courthouse, walked in and was confronted by what I thought was a strange environment. The courts are segmented into three sets of, I'll call them pews, but they're really seating areas. And then the first set was the Fifth Estate. And the newspaper men and the TV guys, they were all over the place. It was packed. The next set of seats were apparently reserved for other attorneys who were interested in the case, family and friends. And the third one that blew me away, there were 20 teenage girls, all giddy over the two boys that were about to be prosecuted. They were like their posse, you know. They were there to view the boys. Now, holding court over all of this is Leslie Abramson. Leslie is a very well-known attorney, about 5 foot nothing, with a frizzy, I call it an Israeli afro, and she was having the time of her life. She was the belle of the ball, laughing and joking with everybody. The second the boys walked in, she turned to stone. She became a real lawyer who you can see never lost a case. Well, I was called to the stand, remember, for 45 seconds, and Leslie was giving it to me pretty good. I had no paperwork to prove anything I said, although the veracity of what I said was not really in question. It's just I felt uncomfortable with nothing to back me up. At any rate, she got me everywhere. 45 minutes into it, remember, 45 seconds? 45 minutes into it, I get a question from her. She says, "Mr. Cohen, when was the last time you saw my client?" And I said, "Well, the last time I saw him was when he was being arrested on TV." And she said, "Mr. Cohen, how many other clients have you lost?" The judge said, "Sir, you don't have to answer that." And I said, "I will answer that. First of all, I don't believe that the arrest of a client constitutes the loss of a client. And secondly, I've lost as many clients as you've lost cases." Dismissed. I was out. So I finally got back at her, but she did nail me to the wall. But that's the nuts and bolts of the tennis situation. The moral, you know, I thought that this was going to be a very easy transaction. 50% down. The property was available. Properties were available in their with their parameters. But it wasn't. So there is a moral to this story. The story is, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true. And that's the tennis story.
And so they're buying a house with an inheritance that was to come. They were taking care of that. That's actually really creepy.
Yeah, yeah, it
what
is
a
creepy.
Story.
The creepiest thing to me was that the inheritance was originally $14 million, and the boys got wind of the fact that the father, Jose, was changing his will and making it only $7 million, and he was cutting it in half. And that's what triggered them to decide that the parents had no right to live.
Oh, my goodness.
That's terrible.
And they got what they deserved.
Yeah. Well...
All right. Well, you're full of stories because
I'm full of a lot of things, Rich.
So, you know, as real estate agents, we all fall into a place at some point in our career that we think we're pretty smart.
Yeah.
And so have you ever felt like you're smarter than everybody else?
Absolutely. The very moment I passed the real estate exam, I thought I was God's gift to humanity. I was smarter than everybody else. I walked around that office like they should be worshiping at my feet. Well, I was going to show them, because all the managers I talked to when I was interviewing as to which company to go with informed me that it would take me 6 months before I get a check. So they said, make sure you have reserves for 6 months. I said to myself, come on, not me. Maybe everybody else, but not me. Well, I decided I was going to be proactive, and I knew that I had no clientele, so I knew I had to find clientele, and the best way I thought was to hold open houses. So I also didn't have any listings, so I couldn't hold my own open, and as it turned out, I realized that the people in this office, there were several of them that were pretty big producers, and they must have more than just one property that they want held open. Even though most of them had split personalities, they couldn't be in two places at the same time. So I saw one advanced years elderly lady who was known to be very successful. And I asked her, I said, would you like me to hold open one of your listing? Oh, yeah, sure. So I was saying, okay, get a seven-figure property in Beverly Hills or maybe a high six-figure in Brentwood. Well, it turned out to be Brentwood, but it was a one-bedroom, one-bath condo listed at 139. I was less than thrilled, but beggars can't be choosers, and I just took it. And I, in those days, and I assume it's still the same, the open houses were either on Saturday or Sunday, usually on Sunday, for 3 hours, 1 to 4 or 2 to 5. I selected 2 to 5. I got to the property and was about to start hammering the directional signs in, and realized that, number one, there's no place to hammer them in. It's all concrete. So I had to lash them to either a pole or a tree or something. Anyway, I was not, oddly enough, the only person holding open house in the area. So there were like 5 or 6 directional signs going every which way on each block. Okay, fine. Each corner had at least 5. I hold it open, open the window, open the drapes, and turn on the lights, etc. And I'm sitting there, and the longest 3 hours of my life goes by, and not a single solitary person comes in. 3 hours, nobody. I was expecting a throng. Well, okay, those are 3 hours of my life I'll never get back. And I start to close up, close the lights, draw the drapes, etc. But 5 after 5, the intercom rings. And I said to myself, this person, be it a guy or a gal, had 3 hours to come. Why did he choose to come 5 minutes later? But I said, you know what? I've invested 5 minutes, 5 hours, or 3 hours, with another 5 or 10 minutes. Let him in, comes upstairs, looks around for about 10 minutes, asks me a few questions, and says, I'll think about it. Well, that's kind of like the Hollywood statement, don't call us, we'll call you. Go to bed. I usually get up in the morning around 7:30. At 6 o'clock, my phone rings, and I'm 2 days not to answer it. So I pick it up, and I'll be a monkey's uncle. And I'm not a monkey's uncle, but it was him. It was the young man who saw the property late. So he sees it late, but he calls early in the morning. I mean, he's got to get it together so he can get this properly timed out. At any rate, we meet at the office. And as I go to the office, I said to myself, I'm going to have to write an offer. I don't even know what an offer looks like. What am I going to do? Well, I was too vain to ask anybody else. But fortunately, in those days, offers were one page, letter size, and the half of it, the bottom half of it, were just blank lines where you could fill in whatever you wanted based on the property. Made the offer. Remember, it was 139. Offer was 130. Again, I always informed him to inspect the counter, and he did. He was okay with that. Got the counter. It was 134. We went into escrow 134. 45-day escrow. 6 months? I don't think so. I'm way better than that. Well, this particular property had everything wrong with it. The inspection was horrible. It had termites. It had mold, and mold wasn't even an issue in those days. It had tandem parking, which is not that big a deal, but the tandem parking was with another unit. It had everything. It was just awful. And our friend Krusty, the listing agent, every time a horrible issue came up, wanted to cancel. But I put my nose to the grindstone, and we attacked every one of those issues. And eventually, we closed. Now, because of all the problems, it took 180 days to close. Now, I'm no math wizard, but 180 days certainly sounds like 6 months to me. So though I thought I was smarter than everybody else, I was not. It's a horrible thing for me to admit, but that's the truth. and the thing that you can take from this as a moral issue is when bright, intelligent people speak, listen. And I should have listened to what they said.
You know, hearing your stories, like, I just want to hear every one of them. For those of you that that get the opportunity to see the book, The Little Black Book of Real Estate, those that get the opportunity to read it, the titles of the chapters make me want to read each one.
Yeah, the publisher said the same thing, actually, that it was intriguing because, you know, little black books are usually kind of nefarious.
Right. But I just love them. I mean, David and Goliath, I want to hear that. The Troublemaker, The Peril of Air Travel, the Almost a Full Service Realtor. I want to hear that one.
Yeah, I want to hear Full Service. Maybe we don't. This exactly. is PG rated.
But... No, it's okay. That's a good one. The one that I like, as I said, the first one, the tennis one, was the one that everybody asked me questions about. They were intrigued by it. The one that I liked is David and Goliath, which you had mentioned. And I'll go through that one fairly briefly. I had been working with buyers and been fairly successful with them, but I decided that it was time that I start getting listings. And in those days, the best way to start that was to get a protected farm. Now, I assume some offices still have that, but that was a big deal in those days. And I looked at the map that showed the farms, and there was a spectacular farm that was available. Very high density of properties, good price ranges, and fairly close to the ocean in Marina Del Rey. I just jumped on it because I felt that this was going to lead me to the promised land. Well, the broker told me that I could have that farm, and I started to work it. I had 8 listing appointments. I lost 8 listing appointments. I was 0 for 8. Shaq would be most upset with that from the free throw line. 0 for 8. Now, what had turned out is that another company happened to be a pair of agents, a team of agents, who were working that farm as well. And that's perfectly fine because they weren't in our company. They happened to be, as I've heard Rich mention many times, not only rock stars, but they were the rock stars of the rock stars. They were the ones that the heavy hitters looked to for information. They were the creme de la creme. They were the best in Los Angeles County. It was Dave and Paul. Dave and Paul were spectacular. So I was 0 for 8. I had to do something differently, and I did. I walked up to the 9th listing, knocked on the door. They let me in. And at this point, I really didn't have anything new to contribute. A very nice couple showed me around with a lovely townhouse. We sat at the kitchen table after looking around, as we did in those days, and chatted for a while. And the wife went to the kitchen to bake chocolate chip cookies. And I knew I loved her right then and there because I'm a chocolate chip cookie freak. And the husband immediately got to the point. He says, you know, we've looked at other agents. We've interviewed other agents. I said, you should, because that's the only way you're going to know how good I really am. And then he said, we were very impressed by this team. I said, I'll bet it was Dave and Paul. And she said, that's correct. He said, they were very impressive. And I said, they're great agents and they're friends of mine. Well, they weren't really friends of mine, but they were people I knew. So he said, you know, they have 53 listings. I said, that's very impressive, isn't it? He says, sure is. How many do you have? Well, I have three. Actually, I only had two, but I was trying to take their listing as one of my listings. He said, well, what do you think? I said, well, listen, what is your definition of a listing? Well, a listing is the right, exclusive right, to sell my property and to represent me in that sale. I said, you're absolutely correct. I said, but you're missing one parameter. A listing is a failed sale. It's a sale that hasn't happened. When you have 53 listings and you sell one, you've done what you're supposed to do, and then you only have 52 more sales to make. You have these people, good though they are, have 53 failures. How many do I have? I have three failures. Which one do you want to list with? They listed with me. Now, they didn't list with me purely because of that argument. They knew that I could think on my feet and that I was aggressive and that I was bright and I was pleasant. You know, you can fool some of the people all the time. And from then on in, I never really overtook Dave and Paul, not their real names. By the way, the real ones did call me on this and ask me about it. I was seven out of 14, the next listing appointments. So it's 50%. Shaq would be thrilled with that at the line, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he would.
So that was it. I really enjoyed that one because I was up against the best, and eventually I was able to hold my own. Never overcame them, never got better than they were, but did manage to deal with them on an equal basis for quite a while. We're still friends, by the way. They're good people.
That's great. That's a great example, though, of taking a different tactic, a different approach, you know, and actually flipping something around.
Well,
that almost is like you think it's something bad for you, and you're actually flipping it around and saying, look, you know, do you want to be one of 53 people that need help and service, and you know, or do you want somebody that's more dedicated to you?
Well, yeah, that was the normal argument. You'll never see them again. There'll be people who work for them, and they'll never put the attention to the property that I would, or that other people would. And the moral of that story really is, if you think outside the box, you'll be successful.
Yep. Love that.
And yeah, if you're 0-for-8, you should try something new.
You're right. Isn't that the definition of insanity? I think Einstein said it, that doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Well, I liked the phrase when you said, you know, out of the box, you know, of it's a failed sale.
Yeah, it is.
Mm. Okay, that was what I honed in on.
That was the whole gist of the discussion.
Right.
Think outside the box, and that was one of the outside of the box statements.
I love that.
So, Dr. Cohen, tell us who the troublemaker is.
Okay, this is a fun one, and it actually was quite successful. I was in Boston, and in Boston, you go to the various pubs and bars and clubs that are there, and who am I to say, don't do that, right? So I went, and I was having a great time, because that's what I went there for. Apparently, I was having too much of a great time. And there's a tap on my shoulder. Now, I'm 6'4 at the time and 220 at the time. And I turn around, and this guy makes me look like a midget. He's got muscles on top of his muscles and muscles in his cheeks. It was unbelievable. He said to me, sir, we'd like you to tone it down a bit. Now, obviously, he was the bouncer at the bar. I turned and I said, yes, sir. I was not going to get into an altercation with this guy. Although I've been in many altercations in my life, but not with him. And I did. I turned it down. I toned it down a bit, and still enjoying myself. But apparently, and I don't drink, so this was not alcohol related. I ratcheted up again a bit. I didn't realize it. I realized it as soon as he tapped me on my shoulder again, and he said, "Sir, you will either have to tone it down, or I will have to ask you to leave, or I will escort you out the door." I said, you know, I've had a nice time here. Thank you very much. And I left. Fast forward 5 years. I'm working out at the gym in Marina Del Rey, and all of a sudden the door darkens, and in walks this guy who literally filled the entire door. I don't know how he got in. Looked familiar to me. Well, you know who it was. It was my buddy Lenny from the club. So he didn't recognize me immediately. I did, because he was kind of hard to forget. And eventually he says, you know, I know you from somewhere. I said, yes, you do. We had a couple of conversations in Boston at the club. Oh, yeah, I remember. What are you doing? Well, I'm in real estate. He says, you know, I'm thinking of buying a house. I'd like to buy a little house out here in California. And I said, great, I'd be happy to represent you. Well, he wanted a small house, 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, under 200,000. At the time, they were there. Showed him a couple in Westchester, made an offer, and he bought it for 185. Next I know, he's ready to move on up. He was in publishing and had done very well. And he said, I want to sell this house and take the equity and buy the next house. We sold that house for 275, and he bought something for 440 in Playa Del Rey. Same thing happened again. The next year and a half or so, we'd been friends all along. He wanted to move up, so we sold that one for 635, and he bought something for, I believe, 850 in Manhattan Beach. And then he moved up again and again and again. We finally ended up at a $3.4 million home in Manhattan Beach, 6 blocks from the ocean with a great ocean view. He put $4 million into it, so it turned out to be a $4.4 million house, and it eventually was valued at $6.8 million. Well, he pulled a lot of that equity out, bought a bunch of fixtures in Manhattan Beach through me, and we sold a few of them through me. The bottom line here is that I did 15 size transactions with this guy, 15 sides, and we ended up remaining good friends to this day. It was a very profitable situation for me, not so profitable for him, because when the market turned, he had a lot of issues, but we don't have to get into that right now. But the moral of this story is, you know, don't burn your bridges behind you, because you never know. And this was a very, very financially successful and personally successful proposition for me.
I'd say congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Right.
A long time ago.
I love those morals to the story, though. Little golden nuggets,
absolutely.
Right there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's your story about the peril of air travel? I can think of plenty today.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a terrible fear. I'm sorry. I have a terrible fear of flying. And as a matter of fact, there will be another book coming out in about a year that sort of centers on that, but that's for a different discussion. There was a young guy in my office who was, again, thinking himself to be God's gift to real estate. Well, I don't know how he could be, because I was, right? So he said he was going to get into commercial real estate. He had a very high-end commercial buyer for like an 18 or 20 unit building, and they had written an offer, and it went beautifully, and they got it accepted. And I said, well, when do you open escrow? And he said, well, I got to wait for my buyer. And I said, what do you mean you got to wait for me? He's flying back to New York, and he wants to get his down payment and come back. I said, isn't that peculiar? I mean, even in this day, we can get money wired. There are all kinds of ways of getting it sent to you. He said, no, this guy was very conservative, and that's what he wanted to do. Okay. So he ends up taking his flight from New York. My friend John drove him to the airport. And on the way, this buyer decided that he wanted to hijack the plane to Cuba.
What?
He hijacked an airplane to Cuba. Well, when John found out about this, he was devastated, as you can imagine, because he was, after all, God's gift to real estate. And he immediately got out of the business. So if you're buying a used car from some used car dealership, and a guy in fatigue smoking a Cuban cigar, you may be dealing with my friend John. And the moral of this story is never underestimate the power of Fidel's cigars.
Well, you know what? You've got like 20, 30, 40, 50 golden nuggets and tactics in this book that I love, and
Thank you.
they hit home. They really do, and they mean something. But so I just have two questions for you real
Okay,
quick
sure.
that maybe aren't related to the book.
Okay.
But what was the biggest challenge that you overcame in this stellar career?
The biggest challenge I had,
And how
oh,
did you
okay.
do it? Yeah, and how
Yeah,
did you do it?
well, when I started, the biggest challenge was obtaining clientele. Because a lot of people in those days, I don't know if they still do, ask you how long you've been in the business. And if you tell them I've been in for 3 weeks, you're in trouble. So I would tell them that I've been involved in real estate for 6 years because I had rented an apartment, and that's a real estate transaction. I didn't say I was a realtor, I said I was involved in real estate. And that seemed to help me. Not exactly an honest assessment, but nonetheless, it worked.
Right. And my second question was to our listener audience, new people into in the real estate business, or people with a few less years than you in the industry, what's one thing that you would want to say to them, or maybe something even that you wish someone had told you?
Something I would advise somebody. The first thing I would say is don't get in. That would be the first thing because it's a tough business. It's paper sensitive and although it's a little bit easier now with computers, but it's still a very difficult business and it's dog eat dog and it's very cutthroat and it's something that you have to be able to accept the word no, and you have to be able to accept the fact that people are more successful than you are. At least at the beginning. Maybe we'll get there someday. What I had suggested, what I would have suggested, oh, I have suggested, is that try to get in with a mentor, somebody who knows what they're doing. That would be your first step. It won't create clientele for you, but it will make you feel more comfortable with the paperwork and the business itself. And do some cold calling if you can. Now, I know these days you can't do that or shouldn't do that. And do open houses and be available. Be available to whomever strikes you. And keep in touch with friends of yours who may be interested in real estate. We've all had this experience of running into somebody in a grocery store. And you have a little chit chat, and the person says to you, "Are you still in real estate?" And I say to myself, "You idiot. I mail email you once a month and I give you send you Christmas cards and everything else." Yes, I am in Israel. Oh, I wish I'd have known that because we just bought a beautiful house in Santa Monica. Well, I said, I wish you had known that too, but congratulations and good luck. All the time cursing under my breath, of course. So keep in touch with family and friends, and make sure that you do the work. Go to the office, listen to what other people say. They've had the experience and they will be able to help you, even if they're not directly helping you. If you overhear something that would be helpful to you, keep it in your mind.
Great stuff.
That is good stuff.
Thank
That
you.
is good stuff.
So, Larry, we're running out of time,
We
and
are.
we have a
Okay.
bunch of stories left, a bunch in the book
Okay.
that we haven't even come close to. But what story would you like to wrap this up on? We need one more story from you.
Okay, one more story. The story is the last one on a list that I have. It's Feng Hu. And this started very innocently again with a very intelligent young woman who was in finance. And I sold her a very nice condo again in Marina Del Rey. And she held on to it for quite a while and then decided that she wanted to get a single family residence. So she contacted me, and we through my incredibly fantastic marketing, we sold it very quickly. We went into escrow very quickly, and we started to look for a house for her. Well, we went all over the place, and she was okay with being in the valley. So we looked in the valley. We found a house that looked pretty good. We went in, had great views from the back and also from the front. And in order to show the front view a little better, I opened the window a tad, you know, the kitchen window. And she looked, she said, it's great, it's great. So we decide she's going to write an offer on it. It was listed, I believe, at $650. We offered, I think, $620, something in that neighborhood. And I call her in because the offer had been written. I call Ellen in, and she walked in the door. And as she's walking into the door, my phone rings. I pick it up, and my goodness, it is the seller of the very property that we are writing the offer on. And she is livid. She's so angry. I'm glad I wasn't in front of her. She would have tried to flatten me. Apparently, when I opened that kitchen window just a few inches, I nudged a crystal that was in proper position. She now had to get the feng shui master, and I didn't even know what feng shui was at the time, to come in and reposition that crystal at the proper positioning at the cost of $300. Well, I let her vent, and Elle was in with me when it was happening, and she was giggling. She thought it was pretty funny. I didn't think it was funny at all. I said goodbye, hung up, and I said, do you really want to be in escrow with this woman? Because she had heard what happened. And I knew I didn't, but at any rate, yes, she did. She absolutely did. She loved the house, and she said, I know that with your charm and your incredible abilities, you'll get this through for me. Well, she was appealing to my ego. That and chocolate chip cookies will do it every time. So we wrote the offer. I presented it. We did it in person those days. No fax. Well, we had fax, frankly, but no emails and none of that stuff, no scanning. So I sat down with the listing agent, who was very pleasant, and the owner, who was not quite as pleasant, but did not go off on me, shockingly. Presented the offer. It was a good, strong offer. We did have subject to the sale, the final closing of her property in Marina Del Rey, which we were both very comfortable with. And they said, thank you. You know, don't call us, we'll call you. Well, they did call me, came up with an offer, very, very, seemed like a good offer. They asked us to remove the contingency, which I knew that my buyer was more than happy to do, because we were very comfortable. It was an all cash deal, so we were fine with it. And then I was reading through it, and at the very last line, there was a statement, seller to take front door with her. Seller is going to take the front door.
The front door.
The front
door. The entire front door.
The entire front door.
Okay, just making sure.
Okay, so I'm saying to myself, what the hell is this? Well, I can't say that. What the heck is this? Well, I called up the listing agency. She said, well, the front door's been feng shuied, and she's moving to the Bay Area, and she wants that door for her new place in the Bay Area. Okay, you know, it's unusual, but I think it could be done. So I tell my buyer what the counter was, including at the front door. And she thought it was a little weird, but she said, oh, yeah, we can deal with that. Well, we did deal with that. There were, in this particular deal, 11 counter offers. I think that's a Guinness Book of Records. 9 of them were with relationship to the front door. Who was going to take it off? Who was going to pay for putting the new on? Who was going to pay for the new door? Who was going to pay for the trim? It went on and on and on, and it was extremely frustrating. And finally, we got it through. She's still in the house. It's probably worth around $2 million now. She paid, like I said, I think it was 6.25. She's very happy. And the moral of this story is, if your gut tells you to run, don't walk. And I could have saved a lot of years off my life by not dealing with that one.
That gives but anyway. You meaning to shut the front door.
I'll put that in the next book. Yeah,
there you go.
Larry, the book is awesome. For those of you watching us on video, this is the book, The Little Black Book of Real Estate, which is a full 8.5 by 11 size.
Yeah.
And font size big enough that even I can read it. So appreciate that. It is hilarious. You've got some great stories here, great life lessons, and congratulations on the book. Let's see. I bought my copy on Amazon, so I know it's available there.
Yeah, it's available on Amazon. Barnes & Noble has contacted me, but I think I'm turning them down because they're going to price it too high. In order for them to make their profit with their bricks and mortar and everything else, it would be over $30. And I don't think that's a fair price.
Well, so, and you'd have to actually walk into a store. So you can go online exactly. And get this delivered to your house
yeah.
Right.
But
tomorrow.
But that is, the book is available on Amazon in the full title, A Little Black Book of Real Estate. And I encourage you to check it out. See what you think. It's kind of fun. On the back is a pretty heavy biography or autobiography uh-huh. of myself. Again, most of it tongue-in-cheek, but nonetheless, it's informative.
Well, I think everything you say is a little tongue-in-cheek, Larry. So appreciate your sense of humor.
Thank you.
Great read. So much fun. I actually, as I'm reading the book, because I know you, I hear the words in my head in your voice. So thank you for that, my friend.
Oh, my goodness.
It's great stuff. I wish you much success with the book.
Thank you very much.
And
appreciate
even more
that.
Than that, you know, it's so enjoyable.
Yeah, it was a labor of love, and I really did enjoy it. It was fun.
Right.
I'm glad other people are enjoying it, too.
That's great.
So thank you for being here with us today. Any words as we wrap it up?
Not really. I just want to say thank you guys again for having me. I really appreciate it. It was fun talking to you. And I encourage people to watch this podcast because there's going to be a lot of information that's going to help you in your business.
Excellent.
So good luck to all of you.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Larry. You had me intrigued
Thanks,
all morning.
Appreciate it, Todd.
Yep. All right, so if you like this podcast, smash that like button. We really appreciate that. It gives us feedback. It'll make Larry feel good as well.
Right.
Todd, do you have anything as we
go? No,
wrap up?
I would just say go get the book because you just start reading it and then you don't want to stop. And that's why it's just got great little golden nuggets in there for
Absolutely.
All of you.
And, yeah, people have told me that they've read it all in one sitting. There are a number of people told me that. I'm glad people are enjoying it.
And a phrase comes to mind a couple times. There's a couple, you just can't make this up. That's the phrase. You just can't make some of this stuff up. You know?
Reality is stranger than fiction.
Yep.
So
I think
true.
Every realtor can relate to that.
I believe so. Anybody who's been in the business for more than a month, this will resonate.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
So, thanks for being with us today, and we'll see you next time.
Like what you're hearing on The Real Estate? Tell your friends about us. Tell them to check out all of our episodes on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and Spotify. And don't forget to send any topics you want us to tackle to therealestate@homesmart.com.